And they put 75 of us in a place about half as big as this room. And we go charging out of Halifax, and he's zigzagging all over the place. And by the way, I had bright red hair. If you've got bright red hair in a group of men and they're hunting for somebody, it's you. So wait a minute. We get out there in the middle of the ocean one day, and they bring in a thing, a pot of some kind, about as big as this thing and about that deep, and it was full of milky subject with red stuff floating in it. And nobody would eat it. And here on this boat, by the way, the front was Canadians and the back was Australians and Americans in the middle on this deck. And here come the Canadians down, they won't eat it. Here comes the Australians up, they won't eat it. Here comes the captain down of the boat. And I'm standing there, minding my own business. He looks at me and says, I'm going to put you in the brig. I said, why? He says, because you won't eat the food. I says, nobody's eating the food. And he got mad as hell and stormed out of there. And I told him that the Canadians and Australians had been down. And about an hour or so later, we got some cheese and tea, and that was our dinner that night. But anyway, we pulled into Liverpool, and we went to a place called Chorley in Lincolnshire. And we still didn't know why we went overseas. And finally, we found out we were going to be trained as flying control officers to do into this British system that they had. And they sent me to, they parceled us out to RAF Fields. And I was sent to Abingdon, near Oxford. And that was a pre-war station. And the RAF at that time was stratified. They had a private's mess. They had a corporal's mess. They had a ground sergeant's mess. They had a flying sergeant's mess. They had an officer's mess. And I don't know what the WAFs had. But anyway, we survived it. The course they gave us at what was the name of that place? It was down in southwestern England. The British had been at war for 4 years, and they threw it to us hard and fast. They had some planes called a... What was that old airplane?
Anson?
Anson, yeah. If you sat beside the pilot, you had to turn a wheel 132 times to get the landing gear up. And if you flew in the daytime, you went to school at night. If you flew at night, you went to school in the daytime. And nobody got much sleep. And they really put it to us. But the main thing they had was a mock-up control tower. And we walked up to that, there were about five of us. The guy says, you're the control officer. And what we didn't know was the thing was bugged. Anything we said, probably even what we were thinking, I don't know, they heard. First of all, an airplane calls in for landing, and I thought, this don't sound right to me. Because he's landed, taxied in, shut off his engines. Then all of a sudden, hell broke loose. Bombers were flying around all over the place as fast as you turn a runway in this mock thing. They bomb it, put you in another one. What they were doing was, instead of 15 minutes to do this, you got two. And a lot of our guys that failed were taking too much time. So out of the 75 of us that went overseas, about 45 of us got commissioned. They worked us over, believe me, they did. After stuff on this air raid was going on, these three officers came out, laughing like the heck. There was a big explosion before they came out. Laughing like hell, told us we were all dead. Anyway, I was sent back to Turley, and after a while I got a second lieutenant's commission. And by the way, I was peeling potatoes when I got commissioned. And that sergeant was a mean so-and-so because he knew we were all going to bribe you, second lieutenants. And he was very upset that I wasn't going to be peeling his potatoes. Believe me, he was. Anyway, I was assigned. I went back to Abingdon as an officer, and it was very entirely different. And I did meet a nice lady there, by the way. She was a WAF sergeant in training there. And we were just friendly, and she taught me more about England than you could do. I think a history major could tell me. She was a lovely lady. But one night there, Air Commodore or something like that came into Abingdon. And as I said, this was a pre-war place. Silverware out everywhere. All the plates were silver. Silverware. China for drinking and things like that. And you lined up by rank and serial number. I had been a second lieutenant for about 3 weeks. Guess who was on the end of the line? Anyway, after that, I was assigned to Abingdon. And Abingdon was, what should I call it, a mud hole. I remember I reported to the thing, and the first thing the officer that was in charge of the squadron I attached to, he says, go to supply and get yourself a pair of galoshes. That's how bad that place was. I mean, the mud was this deep on the roads. And they had no use. They were segregated there. The air people didn't talk to the ground people. We weren't allowed to talk to them. 3 months I wasted there until one day I fired a yellow flare down the runway, and a lieutenant colonel turned around and he erupted. I mean, he chewed on my butt for 10 minutes. And it stormed out. Next day I was sent to Thurlow. Best thing that ever happened to me. I got to Thurlow and we had to do everything. Right off the bat, they started to train us. Of course, as you air crew know, or the navigators and pilots and so forth, we had to line you guys up in formation order to save 15 minutes fuel. And boy, I mean, it took a while to get used to that. But it went along pretty good. When I got to Thurlow, I realized that the place was really well run, like a well-oiled machine. We had Colonel Robinson was the commanding officer. Lieutenant Colonel Raper was the air commander, and Lieutenant Colonel Williams was the group ops officer. And ladies, if you'd have seen Colonel Robinson, that movie 12 O'Clock High, he could have been the leading man there. He was absolutely handsome, about 6'3", dark wavy hair, and he just commanded. He'd come into the place and the place would be hushed. He'd just sit down and everybody go about their business. But I'll tell you, if you ladies had seen him, you'd want to have dated him, I'll tell you. Anyway, I got along at Thurlow pretty well. While I was at Abingdon, I'm going to go back up a little bit as a corporal. I met a corporal there, and he was going through the same course for the RAF. And he shook my hand and he says, I'm going home this weekend. You want to go with me? So I went down there, and I immediately became the third son of the Cheshire family. When I got there, his mother sat me down and made me a cup of coffee. And then she turned around and made me apple pie. I mean, all this, I'm a stranger, first time I met him. But anyway, that continued on for quite a while, and anytime I was tired of the war, I could go down to their home and spend the night there, and they had a gorgeous what do you call them, things on the bed that's all fluffy, and you can, when you lay on them, they wrap around you. You see, well, you know what I mean. Boy, you get in that thing after those army cots, it's something's good. That association with that family still goes on today. Now, that started in 1943. And you tell me the British people don't have a good heart or hard to get along with. Believe me, they're not. And there's one sitting right there that's a great guy. Anyway, we went on through there, and one day the guys had gone over Germany, and they had a bad day. And when they had a bad day, the flying control officer had a bad day. And we got done, after every mission, by the way, Colonel Raper would have a little critique with the flying control officer. Never raised his voice or anything. And this day, he just looks at me and he says, how long have you been a second lieutenant? I says, about 10, 12 months, something like that. And he turned around and walked away. 10 days later, I was a first lieutenant. But anyway, it was great to do. I fooled around with the 369th Squadron. When I was new there, I figured if I was going to work with these people, I'd better know some of the pilots and air crew. And we had a reunion in 1982, and I was standing there looking at some of this display that the RAF had brought on. And by God, here comes a guy down and says, are you Reds Carlisle? I says, yeah. He says, you remember all the fun we had in the mess? I mean, we had a good day. It was a great place to fight a war, I'll tell you. The food was good. The mess was great. I have never been to a reunion, and I'm a charter member of this association. I've never heard one thing complain about the food that was at Thurlow. By the way, we had ice cream. And a lot of these places didn't have ice cream. And this guy would come up and he'd furnish ice cream to us. So it would cost us money, a little bit, to buy it. And suddenly the British put a stop to that. So what did they do? The brass got together and collected a pound from every officer on the base. And we bought him out. We owned that ice cream company. And then we used our own stuff. Well, we had ice cream all the time. Both the GIs and the messes, the officers' messes had it. But we did things like on Saturday nights, we'd have parties there. You remember some of them? We'd have we had a little orchestra there on the base, and they'd play for us in the junior officers' mess. And the senior, everybody was there. One day, they said, you're going to go pick up some wax. I said, huh? So we get on one of these 6x trucks, and they go to some place, I don't know where it was, but we loaded the thing up with wax. And I had one wax who came to me and says, Lieutenant, I can't ride in the back of that truck. I says, why? She says, I get sick. I says, all right, so put you in the front. So I climb in the back of that thing, and there's no seats. So one of the wives looks at me and says, here, sit on my lap. It was good. Oh, yeah. It's the job of flying control officer was a one-time shot. We had to obey or join in with the RAF in the way we flew over England. And we had you may remember this, down on the end of that runway, you had the loop on the end of it. There was a hedge, and this farmer owned that hedge. His yard was right back there, his field, and he would not cut that damn thing. Because I remember going down to church on Easter 44, and we had to use runway 12 because the wind was right into that thing. And we put up 18 airplanes, and I'm sitting there sweating this out, because if I knew if there was a hick on the thing, there was going to be one airplane laying on the ground and it might go off. But finally we got 18 off, but the priest, not the priest, the minister, about halfway through says, I'm going to go up and talk to flying control about this. And I just sunk down in the chair, got quiet. It was a great experience being there in that flying control. It really was. We worked very well. After the war was over, of course, everything changed. And by the way, we had a two-year party. You'll like this. The group was stood down, meaning that we were not going to go on any missions. And we're going into the, and they had a carnival come in on the field. I don't know much, but where they got it, I haven't the faintest idea, but you had all these places where you could throw darts and things like that. And the whiskey was flowing very freely. But before that went off, there was a bulletin put out, that bye-bye-bye can do this, you know. No women will be in the barracks. Next sentence. There will be no inspections of the barracks. Now, this thing is suddenly, we are no longer stood down. I mean, these guys are going that hard, real hard. And fortunately, I had not been drinking much that night, because I was the duty officer for the next day. And all these guys had been drinking. They didn't slow up because they had a mission. They just kept on. And we got the planes lined up, and the radio starts talking. Send me out a navigator. This one's drunk. Send me out a gunner. Send me out this. Send me out. We'd send them out, sober them up, put them back in the load of planes. Anyway, they all took off. They all came back partying. It started just like it had never stopped. It was beautiful. It was a great air base, I'll tell you. I talked to some other of my friends at the American Legion. We had a table of 8th Air Force people, and none of them could understand how we had, were having a good time there. I mean, because the people seemed to enjoy it. So this went on, and we came to VE Day. VE Day, the CO lined us up in front of the tower. Tower, by the way, was a building. It wasn't a tower like they have in airports now. And then he told us all about VE Day. And he says, it's all over. This is Victory in Europe Day. And you could look around, you could just see the weight off the shoulders of everybody, including mine. And we started down to the mess. All to the junior officers' mess. I don't know where the senior guys went. And I walked in the thing, and a guy, hand comes out and grabs me. He says, wait. And it was a mess officer. And he waits a minute. He grabs somebody else, takes us back in his office, opens a drawer, and brings out a bottle of VO. We're going to drink this now. And the three of us killed that bottle of VO, believe me. And that party went on that night, on and on. The squadron commanders coming in, grabbing their people, taking them down to their little cubby, their houses where they lived. Do you remember them, where they lived? And they continued the party. And of course, we still had a blackout going on. And I went out to one of my friends there, and I says, where am I going to sleep? Because I knew I couldn't sleep down to get back to my tower. He says, he showed me. So we're going back, and he turned, and I went straight. And I'm walking, and I'm walking, and I see our checkered Jeep. We had a checkered Jeep. We used to lead planes around and stuff like that. So I sat down, and that's the last thing I remember. The next morning, I woke up in my room on the second floor in the control building. My men had picked me up, carried me up 2 flights of stairs, undressed me, put me in bed. The next morning, I woke up sober. But anyway, after the war, we became Casey Jones, and they had squadrons in Africa, I think Italy, and Gibraltar. And I decided one time I wanted to go down to Gibraltar just to see it, because I was ready to go home. I had plenty of points. And I go down there, and we get on this B-17, we're going down to Gibraltar, and I'm sitting in the back with, I think was the fire marshal. What I didn't know, he had never been up in an airplane. And here comes the pilot back with lunch. 3 boxes of whatever was in it now. And we're eating away, and all of a sudden this guy gets a funny look on his face, jumps up, hits his head on the ceiling back here. Remember how low it was by the waist guns? Who in the hell is flying this thing? That's exactly what it said. So we spent a couple of days in Gibraltar, and we go back out to the field to come home. And the CO was there for the 367th Squadron, I believe it was. He says, "I got a special place for you." And I thought, uh-oh, something's going to happen. So I set me down in the bombardier's spot, right at the front where the news was. At Gibraltar, Spain is here, rocks here, runway's there. But at one end of the runway's out on a pier. The other end, about this far above it, was the water. He taxis out, I'm sitting there, and he don't climb, he just goes straight off. So we're about 5 feet off the water, and he starts to climb. I thought, what in the heck is this guy climbing for? So we get up to about 10 to 12,000, I don't know what it was, we were top as far as we could use it. And I'm staying up there behind the pilot, because they're going home too, this whole crew was ready to go home. And he says to me, "Hey, Reds, get me a beer." Now, where am I going to get a beer at 10,000 feet over Spain? He says, "Back in the bomb bay." I'll go back there, and the whole bomb bay is full of American beer. Party time. We're going along, and I think we used up 2 full cases of beer. And we're over the Bay of Biscay, and we see an aircraft carrier. And you've got to remember, we've already had a case used up. And we see this aircraft carrier. And there was this discussion, should we go down? And we decided, fortunately, said no. Anyway, a little further on, they said to me, "There's a cathedral on the coast of France. Would you like to see it?" I said, "Sure." So he says to the navigator, "Give me a route for it." The navigator says, "That way." So help me. That's exactly what he said. Did this. That way. So we went that way. And he was right on the nose. But it's that big cathedral where if it's high tides, you can't get in or out. I don't know what it's called. Huh? Yeah. Anyway, we fooled around. We decided we would look at the invasion beaches. And we flew up and down the invasion beaches a couple times. And we were slightly late getting back to Thurlow, like an hour and a half late. But that's the way this outfit seemed to work. It's a beautiful outfit to do that. And, okay, I can cut now. Anyway, ladies and gentlemen, I hope I didn't bore you too much.
You did.